Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch from a rainy nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. Good, bad, crazy martinis for conservatives. We start with the good and from an unlikely source over at CNN, Wolf Blitzer talking about the ongoing Obamacare glitches, and correspondent Brian Todd really leaving it very unvarnished, explaining how people are very frustrated by this, talking with software and technical experts, and they're just baffled by what's going on here. And then Wolf Blitzer comes up with a suggestion I don't think made many folks at the White House real happy. Here's how it went.
The administration was warned about these potential problems months in advance. We spoke to Robert Leshefsky. He is a healthcare consultant who has clients who are insurers. He says his insurers who dealt with the administration in the months ahead of time, he says the insurers that he dealt with had contentious meetings with people at HHS and other healthcare officials who were in charge of this. Contentious meetings in the months beforehand, before this rollout, warning them this isn't working, it's not going to be smooth, don't do it right then. He says those warnings were ignored. They went full speed ahead and said, we'll work these problems out.
If they weren't fully ready, they should accept the advice that a lot of Republicans are giving them. Delay it another year, get it ready, and make sure it works.
Oh my gosh, Jim, can you imagine such an idea?
I would vote for President Wolf Blitzer tomorrow.
Let's not go that far.
Some corners of the mainstream media have stepped up on this. And, you know, only you're going to find kind of the rear guard, true loyalists of MSNBC trying to argue that the rollout of the Affordable Care Act is going well. And in fact, I think, you know, the Sebelius interview on Jon Stewart earlier this week that we talked about in an earlier Three Martini Lunch indicated how bad it is, that when they have to say, no, you know, part-time jobs aren't up, and, well, it's just because it's so popular. These excuses aren't working, because NRO is pretty good about these sorts of things. But let's say you have your average Joe blogger, and they have a really great story, and everybody links to it. And then people talk about when a Drudge links to you, and Drudge all of a sudden sends this huge deluge of traffic to you. Well, the whole site's down. So if it was just traffic, we wouldn't be able to log on to healthcare.gov. It's not just that. It's a matter of the internal software, which is designed to process all this information, isn't designed to handle the capacity. So it's not just a matter of, oh, we need more servers. It's a matter of the way it's built. And I believe it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz who was saying, well, it was designed to handle 50,000 people at once, which sounds like a lot until you emphasize that they are saying millions and millions of people who are uninsured and they want to get on at the same time. Then, as I've been documenting on Campaign Spot so far today, there are a couple other big issues, one being that for a lot of folks, they'll get into the process of setting up an account, putting in your name, picking a password. Oh, by the way, your password has to have a number in it, and they never actually tell you that, which is one of the reasons a lot of people are having their passwords rejected. But you do it, and then, of course, something goes wrong, and you get kicked out of the system. So then when you try to do it again, you can't log in using your existing username and password. So you have to create a new one, and, of course, it kicks you out again. So when they say, as Sebelius insists, that hundreds of thousands of people have set up accounts through these exchange websites, from at least one reader has at least three accounts created in their name because they kept kicking them out halfway through and they couldn't log back in again. So in other words, when they're saying hundreds of thousands of people have set up accounts, it's possible that the number is like a third, a half of that, of whatever number they think it is. And it's, let's say they think it's 800,000. Well, maybe it's closer to 400,000 because a good chunk of those are duplicates. Then finally, once you get through it, and obviously very, very few people are getting through it. I had one reader who got through yesterday. He estimated about 100 times since October 1st. He finally got through, finally got to see the menu of options, and he basically found them to be particularly crappy, high premiums, high deductibles, very limited choice in doctors outside the system. Basically, they're all bad options. And he says, look, what the thing is that people have been told this is great. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. They're going to get on there and they're going to suddenly realize that, yeah, they can get a plan for like $250 a month, but it's got like a $5,000 deductible, meaning your insurance company doesn't pay anything until you've paid, run up $5,000 that you have paid yourself out of pockets. For other plans, they're going to be very high copays, meaning that you're paying a portion of the fee as well. In other words, it's not going to be a big help, you know, saver. People are not actually going to be spending less of their own money on health insurance. They're going to be spending a lot more. They're going to be deeply dissatisfied. So how is this the good martini? It is every bit the disaster we said it is, and it's becoming harder and harder for Obamacare fans to deny what is happening right in front of everyone.
And even journalists who don't expect to be all that tough on the administration are, as Wolf Blitzer and Brian Todd were in that segment. So speaking truth to power. Where was that at the press conference the other day? We'll get to the media in a less flattering light in just a little bit, but on to martini number two now, and back to the shutdown theater, and specifically the debt ceiling theater. We're, what, now about a week away from the self-described deadline for the debt ceiling by Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. Republicans definitely trying to separate debt ceiling from a government continuing resolution. Democrats doing everything they can to keep them together. Republicans, with the blessing, it seemed initially, of both establishment and grassroots conservatives, going forward with a short-term extension of the debt ceiling till sometime in mid to late November. Democrats immediately poo-pooing this, the idea that we are about to get a little bit of action on one of these issues doesn't seem to be getting very far today.
The expectations, well, nobody wants to go through the debt ceiling. Nobody wants to crash into that. But apparently some people aren't all that concerned about it. They come up with this plan that's going to, would give us about 6 weeks. Well, Dick Durbin's response is, well, all that's going to do is have us working here at Thanksgiving. It's not quite as bad as the guy, the Democratic House member complaining about the lack of fresh towels at the House gym. But look, Senator Durbin, you got these big issues to deal with. You deal with them before Thanksgiving. You won't have to be working on Thanksgiving. But you guys have been kind of stubborn about this. So how do you want to resolve this? Then the third thing is that there are a lot of folks, including folks I respect like Hugh Hewitt, who believe Republicans are winning this fight, who believe that, despite the, really awful numbers in Gallup recently, basically they believe that pressure is building on Obama and that Obama will be, is on the verge of making big concessions on Obamacare. I'm not totally convinced of that. I think Obama thinks he's winning this fight. But if the idea is that if you offer the continuing resolution that raises the debt ceiling, then the GOP loses its leverage on this and that we're going to surrender right before on the verge of victory. I think what we have here in this six-week resolution is something that averts the problems of hitting the debt ceiling, but manages to make absolutely no one happy and basically puts us right back in the same spot 6 weeks from now. This should be a good martini, but it's not. It's a bad martini because I think everybody is still running around believing this can end with a much better result than the current circumstances suggest is, within the realm of possibility.
Jim, just out of curiosity, of course, the president says he's not going to negotiate until after he, gets what he wants, which is a clean raise of the debt ceiling and a continuing resolution. How far would a quote-unquote short-term resolution on either of these need to be before the metaphorical gun is no longer at his head?
It's a very good and fair point. The question is whether Obama really, first of all, he clearly didn't mind the government shutdown because he thinks he's winning. He says, we can't default, we can't hit the debt ceiling. I'd emphasize, and a lot of folks point out, look, because the government takes in tax revenue, it can pay its debts. There is no reason for us to default on our debts. The problem is, you'd say you pay the interest on the debt, you pay, say, Social Security, and then you got a very limited amount of money for all the other stuff you want to spend money on, i.e. defense and the rest of government. That's what Jack Lew was testifying about today. I have a feeling that actually Obama wouldn't mind the economic calamity that would go out if they actually hit the debt ceiling, because then he's got his boogeyman for the next 2 years that he can, every economic, because the economy is lousy. The economy was lousy before the brinksmanship. The economy is lousy today. The economy is going to be lousy for the year to come. But now he has a scapegoat. In a way, he would be perfectly happy to have an excuse every time the economy stinks between now and November 2014. And I think he would love to point the finger at Republicans and basically say to America, well, we could have had a really thriving economy and we could have had a well-run Washington, but it was all those crazy Tea Party Republicans and you got to throw them out. I think the president is perfectly happy to put his personal ambitions ahead of the national interest. And so the idea that, in this game of chicken, Obama is going to swerve at the last second kind of, I think, miscalculates what his ultimate interest is.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and back to the media, as we promised, in a less flattering light. Last night around, 9:45 Eastern time, the Associated Press put out a report that could have significantly impacted the state of the Virginia governor's race, because they claimed that, quote, documents in a federal fraud case allege that Terry McAuliffe lied to a federal official investigating a Rhode Island estate planner now imprisoned for receiving death benefits on annuities secured on terminally ill people without their knowledge. Sounds horrible. Well, the problem is the AP's reporting came from misidentifying a suspect simply referred to in documents as TM and apparently just assumed that was Terry McAuliffe. Now, we could probably have some sort of commentary on why it might not be that hard to assume that, but you should check that fact out, and it turns out it's not true. Less than 2 hours later, they retract the story, and AP has at least a dozen eggs on its face today, Jim. So not a great week for the Fourth Estate, and this is probably the worst part of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of those things where, look, you know, we kind of cynically chuckle to ourselves and say, look, there's some dirty dealings going on with somebody named TM, with the initials TM. It's not unreasonable to say, aha, Terry McAuliffe, but if you're going to write a story saying that he's committed crimes, you better, you know, check it all out. These are the things that libel and slander suits are made of. And when it turns out that the TM is to some other guy, and it's not like it's, you know, if the initials are QX or something like that, you know, TM, you know, right now Tommy Matheson is feeling a little nervous, or, you know, Tim Moore, you know, there are a whole bunch of guys, the initials TM, who could be, you know, could be anybody. So the idea that Terry McAuliffe was, it's one of those things where, look, when you're going for make a big consequential accusation like that, you got to check it out. And sadly, the AP did not. They have a lot of egg on their face. And it's one of those things where this might have been a very big factor in the closing weeks of a, you know, rather depressing gubernatorial race here in Virginia. I wonder if this ends up kind of inoculating McAuliffe on any kind of October surprise type revelations, because he can always say, yeah, like the AP story, all this stuff is made up, yada, 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 and try to blur the crowd. You know, in fact, Greg, do you think maybe this would be someday we will have a politician cynical enough to put out a false accusation against themselves, deny it, have it refuted, and then use that as chaff to distract from any actual accurate accusations of wrongdoing that come up in the final days?
I'm sure that's actually happened, but we live in that kind of Machiavellian world now, so that would not surprise me at all. So without being specific, I hope JG has a great rest of the day.
Jonah's doing fine, thank you.
See you tomorrow,
Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.